RTE2FM. I'm very, very, very excited about my next guest for many reasons. But my niece, actually, I was telling the guys earlier, my niece, Megan, good morning, Megan. I know you're listening. Text me out of the blue last week and said, Auntie Jennifer, you have to read this book. She'd be very particular about books she reads, but she said this one really resonated with me. It's an amazing story. You have to read it. So I'm flabbergasted that I don't know why, how our worlds collided or whatever happened, but Dr. Katrina O'Sullivan is sitting in front of me, is an award-winning lecturer whose work actually explores barriers to education, many of which she experienced herself. And as a child and teenager, she lived, let's say, a chaotic life in extreme poverty with parents battling addiction to heroin. And her book, it's called Poor. It tells a truly remarkable story of how she managed to navigate her way through some desperate times and triumph through hard work and determination. She joins me in the studio and here you are.
Just to say thanks to Jen's niece. I'll pay you later.
She's like, she never really, she wouldn't really be fangirling so much over someone, but yeah. She was like, this is an incredible story. And this is a very good time to do this. We were talking off air about how Leaving Cert is on and a lot of, there's untold stress out there for young teenagers. And we need to talk about hard work, determination and all of that, but alternative ways to get into the educational system.
Yeah.
Your story is of that. Now, let's get into it. Before returning to your family home of Dublin, you spent your younger years growing up in a very challenging environment in Coventry. Can you give us an idea of what that was like and paint a picture for us?
Yeah, so I grew up in a really multicultural area in the middle of England. My family's Irish, so we were an Irish family in the UK, like loads of our neighbours. Mm-hmm. And if you can imagine, like, it's a typical council estate, so you've got all different types, all different stuff going on. And oftentimes when you're in the middle of a council estate and there's a lot of poverty, there's a lot of addiction, there's a lot of trauma, there's a lot of craziness, but there's also a lot of vibrancy and a lot of fun and a lot of crack going on. But I grew up in a home where both of my parents were addicted to heroin. It's quite rare in a family that two parents are addicted to heroin. It's usually one or the other. But in my case, unfortunately, it was two parents. So as you can imagine, I grew up without food, electricity, care, nurture, a lot of the stuff that my neighbours were going through as well, but just not as extreme as me. So I grew up in a real, you know, in a real poor home and a poor environment.
Despite all of that, your parents were central figures in your life and you had respect for them. And like yourself, they were victims of circumstances, weren't they?
Yeah,
so
my dad was in Golden Bridge here in Dublin. He was adopted from there when he was five. So you can imagine what he went through.
Trauma.
Yeah, trauma in the first 5 years. We're still trying to understand his story in the beginnings because we can't access that information. And then my mom also came from significant disadvantage, and poverty is intergenerational. Like, we inherit what we experience in life. It's very difficult to change that. But one of the reasons I wrote my story is because sometimes when you're an addict, it just defines your story in your life. And my parents were so much more than addicts. My mom was fun. She was a great crack. She used to dance and sing. My dad was really intelligent. He could read. He did really well in the Leaving Cert, actually. He got offered a place in Trinity, but he was traumatized and had a difficult start, so it was hard for him. So, like, while they were complicated, and they're obviously, I mean, the lack of love and care really affected me as a little girl and really broke something in me, they also were complicated people who had much more going for them than just their addictions. And I was glad to be able to tell that in my book, to be able to, like, contextualize the fact that addicts are so much more than just the drugs they use.
Which you don't really hear that side of the story that often, you know?
Yeah, of course. And, like, children of addicts love their parents.
Yeah.
Like, I loved my parents and wanted, like most kids, to be loved by them. But unfortunately, they were incapable. And what happens with families like ours is generally it just reproduces itself. And my story is about how I was really lucky to have lots of people intervene, and also systems within Ireland that actually saved me from me becoming exactly the same as them.
History repeating itself, sure. Isn't that what they say? You became pregnant when you were 15. Did you feel a sense of history repeating itself there?
Yeah, like as a teen, like I've always been a bright, vivacious girl, outgoing, great sports. I was always good at loads of things. And, you know, when you grow up like I did in my community, everybody, we were robbing cars, there was robbing, there was lying, there was cheating. Like, I never met anybody who went to university. I never met anybody who works in radio or Microsoft or all these places. So, like, it's very hard to be different than what you see and mm-hmm. what you be. And that's not saying that you can't, you know, we can't change and be different, but it's very hard. And as a teenager, I wanted to be a good girl. Like, I loved to read and I loved school, but also I was really cool as well and I wanted to be cool.
Yeah.
And so there's this clash at 13 or 14 between like wanting to do well and do the things that like the good kids do, but also then this drive that was already in me from mm-hmm. the trauma, but also from just my environment. And at 15, I got pregnant and it was just like, I just leant into that. I was like, oh my God, this is what it is. And to be fair, Jen, like my parents were mentally unwell.
Yeah.
And but the rest of my education, people expected that of me. Like that was communicated to me quite regularly in school. Like the bar was set in like you're going to finish school and that's it for you. If that was success for someone like me. So when I got pregnant at 15, my parents kicked me out and I ended up homeless and I just left school and I was like, right, I'm just going to lean into this life. And my goal then was generally get myself a council flat, get myself social welfare payments. That's the security and let's be safe, me and my son.
In the book, you say, I didn't climb out of the trench myself. I was pulled out. What do you mean by that?
So like in education, for example, I had really complicated experiences with teachers. Some were mean, some were, they expected me to behave like everybody else and succeed like everybody else. It's funny now with the leave inserts. Like we've got kids who are in really poor, poverty stricken homes who are expected to perform as well as people who have loads of money and everything else. And I had obviously a lot of conflict at home, so it was really hard for me to do well in school. But I had these couple of teachers, like one teacher particularly who taught me to wash when I was really small and brought clothes for me and fed me. And then another teacher who actually like came to my house and challenged my parents in terms of saying they need to do better. And then as an adult, when I was in Dublin, when I moved to Dublin, I was really lucky. It was the Celtic Tiger. We had loads of money in Dublin. When you have loads of money in the country, it trickles down to poor people. So like I was living in Dublin One and there was like investment in therapy and programs. And I remember I met a girl on O'Connell Street who I knew from town and she said to me, I'm in Trinity College. And I'm like, what? No, they don't let us in. I genuinely thought you weren't allowed in. Like you had to have a satchel and eat couscous and go into railing to be able to get in there.
Yeah.
And so seeing someone a little bit like me in a place like that was really inspiring.
Representation. We were talking about it earlier on the show, how important that is for people to see themselves represented, whether it's a person of colour, whether it's a person with disability, whether it's a person of a certain social background. So let's go back to Dublin. So your dad moved back to Dublin and began his recovery.
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. So it's funny because my dad would be considered, I suppose, the villain in some senses of my childhood. And then in my adulthood, my dad became the hero. He provided a space for me to actually move into the family home and actually get myself together, because in that period between the ages of 18 and 21 I'd began on my own road towards addiction. I just couldn't cope. Mm-hmm. I was traumatized and unable to manage life. So my dad had got sober in Ireland and actually he came to the UK and said, come and live with us and we'll help you. And I suppose that was the start for me of changing my life and getting opportunities. So I moved to Dublin when I was 21 and I moved into Summerhill. And that's when I suppose I started to actually look for help. And luckily the help was free and available to me at that point. It's so important that when a woman looks for help like me, that it's there.
Yeah.
They don't have to wait for the services. It doesn't cost too much. And at that time, it was all available. And so I was able to kind of move forward in my life and start the road to recovery.
The road to recovery, the road to education.
Yeah.
You ended up going to Trinity. Do you remember your first day in there?
I do. I remember my first day in the lecture. I'll never forget it. It was one of them lecture halls. It was tiered. It was really old fashioned, all wooden. And the lecturer, the first thing he said was, Okay, welcome everybody. Now, you all know the equation of a line. That was the first thing he said. I didn't know the equation of a line. I'd failed school. So I was like in this panic and I was looking around at these kids thinking, they all know the equation. It was statistics. In psychology, we do statistics. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm not good enough. Because that was always the feeling. I felt like because I didn't finish school that I wasn't very clever. And then all of a sudden I'm in Trinity and within 3 months I'm like getting firsts. And I'm like, it's like, is this real? Like, I'm actually brilliant. And I know that sounds really egotistic. We're not supposed to say how great we are. But like to come from my story where I failed in education, I failed and I'm not clever, I'm not good enough, to all of a sudden this having this university tell me that I'm not only good enough, but I'm really good, was phenomenal for me. So Trinity was brilliant for that. But also it showed me what I missed. Like, I was like, these kids have everything. Like, they had grinds, they had family, they had all this money to help them get there. And so it kind of like angered me as well. And I found it difficult to feel like I belonged there. But the education piece was phenomenal and gave me such strength and belief in myself and such drive to continue. It was addictive in some ways, the success.
The story you tell about your life is very tough at times. And that's when he said it's a very tough read at times. But there's a lot of hope in there, isn't there? And that's really why you wrote the book. Like you said, it wasn't just this misery story that you want to get clickbait or people to latch onto. It was the story of hope. So with that, if anybody hasn't picked up the book yet, make sure you go and get it. What would be the central message that you'd like a reader to get from the book, especially younger readers?
I think a couple of things. First of all, if you're a young person and education is, you failed in education in some way, or it's taught you that you're not good enough, you are good enough. I've done it and you can do it as well. But the other message is, I suppose, to the people who are more privileged and have the capacity to make things fairer. What's unfortunate now is a girl like me couldn't get into the Trinity Access Programme today, and the grants are not there. The childcare support isn't there. The system has changed so much and the funding is gone that people like me can't be empowered and can't flourish now. And the message is this: this is not charity, Jen. Like, I'm a talented woman. Like,
you don't have to explain yourself. Isn't that funny? You think, like, it's not because you add real value to society.
Yeah, like, I'm actually award-winning lecturer, I'm policy maker, like, I'm brilliant in my university. I don't mean that in a bad way, I mean it in a way like I'm actually a really successful person. And because of the investment that was made in me from people, but also from the system and the state, I'm able now to contribute. And my kids they're flourishing too. Yeah. So the poverty, the intergenerational piece has changed for me. And the final bit is, like, I'm happy. Like, life is happy. That's the message, that to girls like me or people who are struggling, it's possible to love and be loved and be happy and to have a joyous life. And it takes work and it takes support. But like, if I've done it, then maybe someone else sitting at home who reads it might think, well, if she's done it, I can. I've had so many people message me saying that, which is really inspirational.
Do you think dealing with the trauma is imperative?
Therapy was the most important thing for me to engage in, and it was free. I went into a place in Sheriff Street. It was at Oasis Council and it was absolutely free. When I asked for it, I got it a week later. That was the pivotal piece for me. Obviously, education has changed my life and made me so much more successful. Therapy is the thing that I know healed the relationship with myself, my parents, and also has allowed me to have a wonderful marriage and great kids and all the things that I suppose we all want.
Katrina, it's been a real pleasure. I can't wait to get my hands on the book now when I go down to Clarence Louise, because she's waiting to hand it over
to me. You need to buy your own copy,
okay,
Jen.
Yeah, I'm going to buy it for everybody else. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you today, and I just want to wish you the very best of luck, and hopefully you'll come back and speak to us again about policies and things that you want to make a change with. I'd love to talk more to you. But the book is called Poor. It's by Dr. Katrina O'Sullivan. Do you ever get used to being called a doctor?
No, I don't really use it. I only use it on my Littlewoods catalogue, to be honest.
Or if you're booking a hotel and you're looking for...
No, not yet. I haven't done it yet. I need to start, though.
You need to start doing that, trust me. It's published by Penguin Books. It is available now. Jen Zamparelli on RTE 2FM.